bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to The Photo Show. My name's Ewan Rankin. I'm a professional photographer, and I am here to take you through the week's photography news and answer your questions. If you've got a question, you can send it to us dead easy. Send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and I will read it out, and I'll do my best to answer it. We have three other little buggers here that you've all sent in. Thank you very much. And I need to turn the volume down on the speakers because they're popping every time someone talks in the chat room. If you want to come and listen live, it's 2 o'clock on Fridays, and we've got a chat room, and the chat room's fantastic, chucking loads and loads of comments and questions, and I try and keep up with them while I'm on my own. But it sometimes goes right, it sometimes goes wrong. Also, people can leave reviews in iTunes. If you've left us a review, thank you very much. First one that we've got here this week is from Batwench. We could do with reviews for the photo show because no one ever reviews it. We've got a video and an audio podcast. So go to iTunes and review it if you haven't already. Batwench in the chat room sent this one in. If, like me, you don't claim to be the next David Bailey but are more of a happy snapper, then this is the podcast for you. You get great information of camera and getting the best out of your shots in plain English language. And any tech words or processes are explained so that even I, a natural blonde, can understand them. I've got to say, girl, last week when we did bicubic interpolation, you got more in knowledge than everyone else. You understood more anyway. Great for beginners and experienced shooters alike, and all done in the best possible taste. I haven't got enough room to throw my legs over this desk, but cheers. I'll get some big hands later. That'll do. And we've got one from Brett. Been listening to the British Tech Bagel Show since this God was a boy, the last 3 years. I listen and watch on Saturday mornings while I'm in the shower. Don't want that thought. There's a lot of information to absorb from episode to episode, but if you keep listening, you'll eventually find that life-changing nugget that'll save your soul. Steady on, mate. You'll get a pro trick that'll make your eyes, your photos less shite. For me, it had to do with my love of low-light street photography and an aversion to flash photography. Ewan said that you can underexpose shooting in RAW and boost the exposure in post-production. That solved it for me. Thanks, Ewan and the gang. Keep up the good work. Try not to be so serious and maybe have a drink every now and again. Love, Brett. We've had the odd one and we aren't really that serious, are we? Never mind. Leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks to those people that have in the past. There's loads of them in there. And please go ahead. Right, the week in photography news. Where does it all start for us? First rumour, and it is an absolute rumour, is that Pentax is going to bring out a full-frame sensor DSLR. At the moment, there isn't one in their range. They're all crop sensor stuff. And they're all brightly coloured because the Japanese market loves it and all that kind of thing. But Pentax Ricoh Imaging are not confirming or denying whether it's working on a full-frame DSLR. The thing that's kicked all this off, if you like, that last month gadget website Uber Gizmo said that Pentax was expecting to debut a full-frame DSLR. And the comments that they were quoting were made by Tomoyoshi Shibata. I should have practiced that name, shouldn't I? Pentax's managing director during the interview. Now, the article says that the camera will apparently be different from all other full-frame DSLR cameras, which, I mean, that's just groundbreakingly different if there really is something that's different or whether it's just a bit of speak or hype. Pentax Ricoh Imaging's UK product coordinator Stephen Sanderson told Amateur Photographer, who did the interview, that the firm doesn't plan to issue any response to the report that's been put out. There is nothing to be said at all. But there was a suggestion also from a Hong Kong-based Pentax user called Sam Wong, who is well known to them, saying that a Pentax full-frame DSLR is coming very soon. Pentax Australia also said, this very well might be the year. Hold on to those lenses. So, no idea what that means, but we'll wait and see. You may get a full-frame DSLR. You may not. We've got a couple of intellectual property disputes that are in the news as well this week. The first real big one is to do with a Kickstarter project called Blackprints. Now, Blackprints are fairly simple. You take an image, you run it through Photoshop to increase the black level on it, and put it through threshold, and you end up with a very stark, high contrast image where everything's black or white, pretty much, with not a lot of grey in between it. Now, a young lady named Sabrina Chen decided she would start this up. She only wanted $6,000 for a black print Kickstarter. She ended up getting $66,000, so she did very well. Well done, girl. However, these were all classic car images, and she's used a mix of her own images and those that are freely available on the web, allegedly, until she hit this 1964 Shelby Cobra that you can see here with the number 95 on the side. The problem was, she didn't ask for permission to use it, and the image was actually owned by a guy called Bruno Rattensperger. He was the guy that originally took it, and it's shown on his website. She didn't check that whether anyone owned it. She got it from autoblog.com, which showed it on their website. She presumed it was freely available because they were giving it away as a free wallpaper on the site, and she just used it. Someone then noticed and told Bruno, and Bruno had a bit of a kerfuffle with her, and she's taken it down. Now, the thing is, the real image of the picture is just, I mean, they look identical. It's not even like she's done anything subtle with it. There's the Pierce case, Richard Pierce, I think, in the States at the moment, where the judge said that you can take an original image, and provide you change it and give it a creative eye, then you could be the owner of that new intellectual property, right, even though it's based on a single image. I don't think that would hold up in the UK. This one, I've got to say, there's no huge artistry in this. I'm not having that. This is an identical picture there, and all she's done is run it through a high contrast filter in Photoshop. It is not good enough to say that she's given it a new eye. Not by any stretch of the imagination. And she's admitted it, to be fair to her. In a quote, she said, I did erroneously take Bruno Ratzberger's photo, but I had only intended to use it as a tribute because that particular car, the 95 Cobra, is a very famous one. The image was originally a freely available download wallpaper. I acknowledge that it was my mistake to believe that it was free intellectual property. However, Bruno and I spoke over the phone and we resolved the issue. Also, I'd addressed this as well via blog posts and updates to multiple files to anyone who had inquired about it. It was indeed a simple mistake. The photos are all mine, as I literally have hundreds of my own cars apart from this. So there you go, they're not her cars, photos of her own of cars. And the new image now has the number 95 taken off. And everybody's happy, apparently, which seems fairly simple. The article on Petapixel kind of really pissed me off a little bit, because they were going on about the fact that you'd get away with this in the UK now thanks to the Orphan Works bill. And it's absolute rubbish. That would never, ever have gone through a UK court and been upheld. The Richard Pierce thing that's it's in the US, I really doubt that that would have held up in the UK. It's not good enough to just say that because we've got Orphan Works legislation that's gone through in the UK, it means that all images on the internet are free game. They absolutely aren't. Absolute rubbish. The second thing that we've got is a little bit more embarrassing if you're a director of Samsung, because this is a picture that they put out with a competition. They wanted a whole load of street photography work from Singapore, and they put out this picture and said, this picture was taken with the fantastic Samsung camera. Maybe you can go out and take a picture with your Samsung camera and maybe win another fantastic Samsung camera. Problem was, it wasn't. It was taken on a Nikon, because the EXIF data was still on it as well, on the stuff that was on the internet. And Orchard Road, Singapore-based weekend photographer Danny Santos stepped forward and claimed for it. He put it on his Facebook page and said, amazing, isn't it? The street shot was taken by one of our Samsung photographers, said the advert. Share your own street photo with us. And it wasn't. It was taken on a Nikon. Tut, tut, tut. There's the original photo with the EXIF data. And it was a Nikon. Bad luck, mate. So people everywhere are just stealing images off the net anyway, regardless. So who cares? Next story is Adobe and their Creative Cloud system. Now, there will be no CS7. If you're all sitting around twiddling your thumbs, waiting for 6 to come along and then maybe going to 7, it ain't going to happen, I'm afraid. You're going to get everything in the cloud. Now, cloud is a little bit of a misnomer, because the software is not in the cloud. You've got to have it on your local laptop. And a lot of the processing has got to be done on your local laptop. You will have applications just like you currently do with all Adobe products. This is effectively nothing more than a 30-day DRM system, no more than that. You have to commit to it for a year, and you will have to sign up for Creative Cloud because there will be no more boxed stuff going on. I'm not in a rant in 3, 2, 1. Thank you very much, chat room. No. If you want to get Creative Cloud, and of course it's a free choice, then you can sign up for it. It's 45 quid, I think, or $49 if you're in the States, which is kind of steep, but do bear in mind you're going to get Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, Dreamweaver, After Effects, and Premiere Pro, which is a video editing software. And you're going to get Muse as well, which I thought was quite interesting because Muse isn't available to use anywhere else apart from the cloud stuff. And it's effectively a way of doing very, very functional websites with absolutely no HTML code or code. It's drag and drop. It's kind of like almost making a PowerPoint presentation from what I can see. And that really does appeal for someone who's useless with web stuff like me. But CC is going to cost you a lot more than you perhaps think. If you're in the UK, I looked at the price and I thought that's not too bad actually, because if you look at getting all of those packages, if you're an existing Photoshop customer or Adobe customer, you'll get those for £27.99, which is pretty good. For 12-month commitment, you're paying only there somewhere in the region of 260, 280 quid. So that's not too bad. But here's the problem. The Americans get the same deal for $29.99 in dollars, which works out at about £18.50. So there's no comparison here. You're paying nearly an extra tenner for the stuff. The value's not bad considering the amount of software you get. If you only want one package like Photoshop, it's only going to cost you about a tenner a month. It's $8.89 or something like that, which isn't bad. But it's your own choice to decide whether you want to do it or not. I'm not going to do it because I've got to say, having talked on Twitter with a few people, a guy called iBookery, who comes in our chat room regularly, put me onto Acorn 4. And one of the things, the big gripes I had with Photoshop this year was that they blocked CS5 from using Camera Raw 7.3, which was ridiculous. And of course, I bought a 6D and I had to have 7.3 to do the RAW processing, so I couldn't then process the RAW without going into Canon's own software, which, you know, you don't even want to do that. I hate Canon stuff. It's even worse. So I ended up having to use DNG Converter, but it's another step in the process. It's something else I've got to do. Acorn opened it up, opened up the RAW file, and I thought, I wonder if it's going to do the original EOS 6D file, and I dragged it straight in. Bang, really powerful editor. In some ways, more powerful than the Adobe Photoshop RAW editor, and I bought it on that strength, and it's 20 quid. It's a one-time payment, and what's interesting as well is you're going to get updates to that, and they do regularly update it from what I understand. The last step change was from 3 to 4, and that was because it went from Mountain Lion to Lion. So if you're a Mountain Lion user, you can't use 4. You've got to upgrade. But that was a hardware change issue. But it's still only 20 quid, and it's really powerful. The layout is nearly the same as Photoshop. If you've got Elements, you probably won't see a huge difference. So apart from learning a few controls, I'm going to persist with Acorn, because at some point it's going to have to go away, and I'm going to have to see what I can do. Next issue. There's a new program out there. Wait for it. It's called Glassogram. And just like you think it is, when you see the little rainbow stripes on the side of a Google Glass, you're thinking, this is like Instagram for your Google Glass. Ta-da! Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a superb little program that's probably going to add crap filters to it. It's been used within the Glass development framework. It's a real product out there, by the way. There's no April Fools on this, which I thought there was to start with. You're going to get this linked to the Wink application, which means you can use your Wink to take your photo, and then you can stick a Glassogram on it, and away you go. You can upload it. There's 5 filters to choose from to completely screw up your images and make them look really tacky and nasty, and then you can post them. So if you've got Google Glass, then you can go and get it. But if you're not a white American male, you don't have Google Glass. Now then, if you're South Korea, you've got one of your presidents, Yonhap, which is like an agency, a news agency for them, and they wanted a picture of their president. I need to read her name here. Park Geun-hye, because President Obama visited recently and everyone took loads of pictures of the meeting and so on. So this news agency, Yonhap, wanted a picture of the two of them shaking hands. So you haven't got one, said the editor. No, I haven't got one. I know. We'll do a bit of canny Photoshop and everything will be fine. Here you go. That's their idea of Photoshopping a handshake picture between their president, who's the lady in green on the left, and Barack Obama, who's the guy on the right. Slick as snot, isn't it? You can't tell. Basically, what they've done, for those that are on the audio podcast, they've taken a scalpel, sliced down the two images, and just pushed them loosely together like they're the same. One's taken in the UN, and the other one's taken in a library somewhere, so none of the backgrounds fit or anything. The original shot was a picture of the President Park Geun-hye shaking hands with Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon. That's the way that they should have done it. And I've done a quick example here to show you exactly how you should be doing it if you were using Photoshop. See, now that's the way to do it. Absolutely. Perfect. You wouldn't know, would you? See? Ideal. If you haven't got the video podcast, well. None of that will mean nothing. Have you heard of X-Rite? X-Rite make loads of colour calibration and colour workflow tools. And they're good stuff from what I understand, although I don't own anything by them. What's kind of cool this month, though, is that they're doing a whole pile of free webinars. Now, you don't need to be an X-Rite customer to register. Look like a bobblehead doll, says Kev. Yes, that was kind of the idea. It's gigantic. Before anyone writes in and tells me that it was a bad bit of Photoshop, it was meant to be. So X-Rite do loads and loads of products for colour scanning. You got scanners that you physically drag across print and that kind of stuff for matching colours. They've got these webinars going off. You don't have to be a customer of X-Rite to play along. They've got photography experts and colour experts available to you during the webinars. There's four of them going off. There's one on the 14th of May, which is coming up pretty soon, one on the 22nd of May, and then they're running two on the 30th of May. There's a couple of these that are quite friendly as well for UK time zones. I think one of them starts at midday. The other one starts at 6 p.m. Eastern, so you're going to have to start listening at 11 p.m, so it's not perfect. If you'd like to go on these, what they're going to provide you with, free webinars to help photographers and videographers gain new confidence and learn quick, easy and powerful ways to enhance their colour workflow. Webinar attendees will also have the opportunity to ask questions of those people who are doing the live training. It sounds really good. If you'd like to register for it, it's free and it's at xritephoto.com. There you go. Go and do it. At least it's not on the day of the bash, so you won't miss the bash, which is what was potentially going to happen, of course, with the other bloke the other week. Don't listen. Do you like Snoop Lion? Why did he change his name from Snoop Doggy Dog? I knew who he was then. Anyway, Snoop Dogg's got a new application out, Snoop Lion. I don't want to get shot. And it's called Snoopify. You can Snoopify your photos. It's a free application, so if it's free, I don't know what they're getting in return. We'll have to wait and see. Maybe they get your image. But Snoopify will allow you to Snoopify your images, which basically means you can put on a whole pile of hats and glasses and smoke joints, or you can have Snoop Lion in your photo. There you go. You can save it to your own library. You can send it out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or email. You can do all the normal stuff that you do with your photographs, but Snoop will be in it. I've downloaded it. I'm going to have a play with it with Ellis later. Yeah, we might tweet a few out. We'll see how it goes. It's free, though, eh? But why, says Batwench? Who knows? Who knows? Photo Stitch has got a new app out. If you like taking your panoramas, then this is the one for you. What they've done is they've created, effectively, something that's very easy to use. The interface is supposed to be absolutely superb, and the trial is a full-featured demo, which I've downloaded and I've got to play with, but it automatically addresses the entire scope of technical issues associated with stitching your panoramas together. It deals with overlap, it deals with curvature of lens and all that kind of thing. What's really nice about this is it doesn't just deal with horizontal images. And if you ever tried to stitch a vertical panorama, in inverted commas, together in Photoshop, it doesn't work at all. It can't stand it. It can only do the horizontal ones. You have to physically turn each photo manually and then try and process it so it creates a long one and then turn it back the other way up. This one apparently does vertical and horizontal processing. And you're sitting thinking, well, I bet that's not cheap. It's $20. You can download it for Windows XP or later, so it's XP compatible, which is fantastic. And it'll work on Mac OS 10.6 or later. And it's only $20. I don't know if it's available in the Mac App Store. The story didn't say. Might have a look for that. But for $20, it seems like quite a really powerful application. Go and have a play. Next thing up is a camera review. The Olympus XZ10. This might have a different... what was it called? It was called Photo Stitcher, mate. Photo Stitcher. No, it's a computer application. Everyone's saying there, is it iPhone or iPad? If you're talking about the Snoop Dogg thing, that's iOS. But if you're talking about Photo Stitcher, it's available for Windows or for Mac OS X. It's $19.99, plain and simple. I'll dig you out a link and stick it in the chat room. There we go. Back to the Olympus. It's the XZ10. It's a pocket-sized compact camera. It's pretty small. I'm sorry about the quality of the images here if you're watching the video feed, but it is just what I could get off the net. The size is small. It's very compact. The back's got a 3-inch screen on it, which is touch sensitive as well, so you can use it for your programming. And the outward controls are really fairly simple on this thing. It's got a 12 megapixel backlit CMOS sensor. The spread on the zoom is 26 millimeters to 130, so it's good, but it's not horrifically stupid that you won't be able to hold it still. The equivalent on it is f1.8 to f2.7 on the zoom lens, which is brilliant. High resolution 3-inch touch screen on the back. It's got the TruePic 4 image processor in it. Now, if that doesn't mean anything to you, you remember we looked at the Pen thing last week, the Pen E5 as a rumour. Now, that's a £1,000 plus camera, and that's got the same image processor in it. So you're getting a very good quality image processor with this thing. Shoots full 1080p. It's iFi and FlashAir compatible, so you can share around your network, but it's got none of its own built-in Wi-Fi. And there's also a customizable control ring on the lens, which I don't know what that does. One other thing that's quite nice is it's got a full manual exposure mode. So if you go into manual, you can set all your exposures yourself and your shutter speed and that kind of stuff, and it doesn't start to take over constantly, which is quite nice. Shoots RAW as well, and it'll do 720p video, wait for it, 120 frames a second, which is pretty special. That's not bad at all. For something that's so small and so compact. Now, the review that I read did say that one of the things with this was that the video doesn't allow for manual exposure, which is a bit of an issue. You know, you'd like to be able to make sure you can correct yourself, because otherwise this is just a handheld handy cam kind of thing. But if it does well with the exposure, then you know it may not be so bad. You may not need it to. The fact it's got the really good TruePic 4 processor in it means that you're thinking that the price is going to be quite high, but actually you'd be wrong. This is only $400 if you want to buy it, and it looks a fantastic purchase. The image quality stuff that was in there, this is the 100 ISO image at 100%, so that's one pixel to one inch, one screen pixel to one image pixel, which is very, very good. And then it's shot in RAW. It's a little bit fluffy, but that's okay. You've got more data. You can start to round it up when you compress out later. At the 6400 end, which is the top end of the ISO range, it gets an awful lot more unusable, and it looks to the point that it gets really fairly poor, but most cameras do at the very top ISO. What really interested me in this thing was the anti-shake feature. Now, if you look here, this is an image taken at 1/10 of a second at 26 millimeters. So it's fairly wide angle. And you should, you know, a tenth, I could probably hold it still and get a decent shot. This person here hasn't, and they've not got a great shot. With the anti-shake on, that improves significantly, but you can still see some shake. What really impressed me was when it was at 130 mil. That is a 1/10 of a second at 130 mil. Now, that's what you'd kind of expect. At massive zoom lengths, you'd start to see most people really just falling over with stability. Here's what the image sensor did to it, if you're watching the video. Now, that's not bad. That's not bad at all. That's gone from completely blurry and indecipherable to you can at least read what the book says in the picture. So I'm quite impressed with that, I have to say. Bloody hell, that's crisp, says Adam, just to reinforce what I'm saying. Absolutely. I'd say for $399, this is the absolute perfect buy for someone who wants to do something with their photography. Once the, you know, maybe a child who's sort of 12 to 14 who wants to get into the manual world, but you don't want to get them a DSLR yet in case they damage it, but they can stick it in the school bag or something like that. I think this is absolutely perfect. I think it's a really, really good looking little camera. And it almost harks back with the design back to the original days of the first Olympus Compacts, which I owned one of and was bloody brilliant. The only downside is it's $400 in the States, but if you want to buy it in the UK, it's £349, which is not that much of a saving. You got VAT on top, don't forget, but it's a little bit more. So that's my pick of the week, if you like, almost for the photo stuff. The Olympus XZ10, well worth the money. New features out there if you want to borrow lenses. There's a program, or there's a website called cameralens.com. Now, what this allows you to do is, if you're a photographer, you can register with them as a renter of your camera gear when you're not using it. If you want to be a customer, you can register with them, and you can turn up in a location at a specific date and say, I'd like to rent a 200mm zoom lens off you. So they'll give you a 70-200mm zoom lens, and the local photographer who rents it you will just be a local individual photographer who'll say, here you go, here's this for this amount of money. You're probably going to get it quite cheap. It means you haven't got to carry all your own gear to the location, and you're going to get an awful lot more security, maybe, because, you know, if you really are a pro, or you're in the right kind of the fold of photographers, you'll probably get very good quality lenses rather than the stuff that's being hired out constantly in shops. The other thing that was pointed out in the news story that I read was, if you go to certain locations in the country, and particularly in the UK now, this is going to be the case, there's going to be few or far between the camera shops that will actually loan out gear. So if there's only one in a local area, because they're the only one and they know they've got you, they're going to hammer you on price. So the chances are a little local photographer is going to do you a great deal. Register with the site at cameralens.com, type in where you want to go, and you'll find out if there's any other photographers in the area who've got lenses that are available for you to rent off them. And I looked at some of the lenses that were on offer. They were talking about the Canon EF 2.8 70 to 200mm lens. Now that's a 2.8, that's a £1,500 lens, and the guy was hiring that at £40 a week, which is nothing. I mean, you could almost rent it for 3 months and you wouldn't really notice it. Cameralens.com. Lens is LENDS, not lens as in camera lens, but well done to them. I like that idea. And the last product that we've got is a bit of software, and it's Acviz Refocus 3.5. What this does is takes away all the problems that you've got with images that are out of focus, or if you've got an image that's really good and is in focus, what it will do is give you the ability to blur backgrounds, highlight subjects, and leave them in focus and change away. But it'll also give you that ability to do tilt shift work and miniaturization stuff. This girl needs a haircut, they're saying. Well, actually, the full image, she's carrying a sword, mate, so that's probably why where the fringe has gone. If you're an existing customer and you own the last version of Acviz, then you get an upgrade to 3.5 free of charge, which is pretty good. It's got a very advanced algorithm, apparently, which allows for improved image processing speeds and allows for tilt shift miniaturization and iris blur modes as well. The improvement is especially noticeable when you're using the larger values of the blur parameter, and that's that. There you go. Now then, how much is it? Well, you can buy it in a standalone application, or you can buy it as a plug-in filter for your Photoshop, which you're going to lose in a bit. Doesn't do one for Acorn, unfortunately. It's £31 on the transverse, which I thought was really good. If it's a really good thing, and you can download a fully functioning standalone trial version that'll work for 15 days, and you can just do some photos with it and see how you get on, and then uninstall it if you don't like it. Whether you can uninstall it and reinstall it, I don't know, but for £30, that seemed like quite a good deal if it does loads and loads of stuff. Well done. Did she have a perm before it started to rain? I don't know. The sword with the fringe, she might injure herself. Fringer, says Wonderwright. Very good. Very, very good. That was the news. There is no more. I haven't got any jingles to show you, unfortunately, because still Adam hasn't done them. I'm going to go on every week until he bloody does, you know. Your questions. If you've got a question, then you can send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. I'll read it out, and I'll have a stab at answering it. So here we go. Question one is from Andy in Bristol. He says, hello there. A quick question for you. If I were to store all my old photos up in my attic, could the potential hot weather in Britain, that's a joke, and cold temperatures in winter damage the processed photos or negatives? I intend to keep them in a fairly well-sealed box. Thanks for the great show. Cheers, Andy. My understanding of the problem that you got with celluloid is not so much worrying about the temperature. It's the humidity that's the key part. So if you let it dry out, it gets very, very brittle. So if it gets brittle, it'll crack. And once that that dries out, you're never going to reintroduce moisture to it. And it will just flake open. It'll be awful stuff. The other thing is as well, if it gets moist, you run problems of it releasing some of the chemicals that are in the colourants, so you'll get some running on the chemicals, or if it's sat against something that's absorbent, you'll find that the celluloid will stick itself to that absorbent surface. If it's a hard surface, you run the risk of the fact that it might melt slightly against it as well with the chemicals that are on it. And also, it gets mouldy. It gets really mouldy. Celluloid film, once it gets above sort of, I don't know, 70 or 80% humidity, all it does is turn into mush. Any spores that are in there are just going to grow like wildfire on it because they love the chemicals that are in the thing. If you're in a hotter country, somewhere like Carl Swagger, say, out in the Philippines, where he's getting 90% humidity constantly, celluloid's not going to last a year out there in storage unless you've got it in an airtight container. So my suggestion would be, Andy, if you're going to store it long-term, first thing is take it down to a photo lab and get them to wash it for you. Don't take it to the sink yourself, turn on the tap and get some fairy liquid on it because that won't help. But get it down to them, a proper photo lab. Now, there's bound to be one in Bristol. I'll look one up for you and send you an email back with a place that'll do it. Just take in all your film and say, would you wash this for me? And what that does is get rid of all that excess chemical that's on there from the fixers and sealants, and that will help you combat the fungal issue. Next thing, get it home. If you've got it in long strips, they should, when they processed it, have given you back in a long anti-static strip. Now, that stuff's brilliant because then when you roll it, it's soft, so it's not going to damage it. And also, you can then tape it and seal it. And it gets, not airtight, but it, you know, it's fairly well sealed. And you can store them in little rings and it'll be fine. If not, then to be honest, the best thing you could do is cut up your film and stick it in frames, because frames are excellent. They hold the frame. They allow air to move around the image. And also then the frame stops it rubbing against the next piece of film. One of your big issues is going to be in dry conditions. That means that it gets a lot of static dust will start to cling to it as well. And once the dust starts to cling to it, when you open it out, every time you slide it backwards and forwards, or every time you open it out, just have a look at it, you run the risk of pulling stuff across the emulsion and you'll kill your image eventually. I mean, the thing to think about, I've done a bit of research for you here, mate. The perfect temperature for storing Fuji and Kodak film once processed is 21 degrees C, not much hotter or not much colder, and you shouldn't let it go below 50% humidity, and you should try and maintain not more than 60 to 65% humidity. There you go. That's how to do it. I hope that's helped, mate. If not, oh well. Second question is from Callum B in Dublin. Hi, Ewan, love the show. My question is about depth of field. I understand that the lower the F setting, the shorter the distance for things in focus. But I also know that changes the further away I am from the subject of my photo. Do you have a rule of thumb for F setting versus distance? And is there any rules for what to focus on when taking pictures of people, animals, or objects? Well, first thing, f-stop. Your f-stop is dictating the size of the aperture. So when you're at f1.8, you've got it effectively wide open, the blades are right back, and it's shoving the light through as fast as it can. Now, when it's trying to put in light quickly into your camera, you're going to get grain issues with that, and you're going to lose a lot of quality from your image. So the idea is to turn it down to put the image in more slowly. So if you've got a long exposure at f22, or if your old lens goes up to f32 or 35 or something, then you're going to put you're going to have an extremely good quality image if you shoot at ISO 100. Even at ISO 100, you'll get noise if you're shoving it f1.8. You've got to be clear that when you use depth of field, you're using it for a creative purpose only. You won't improve image quality using f1.8. So for starters, start thinking about setting up your camera and learning your f-stop settings for each lens. Every single lens will have a very slight difference. You won't get it exactly the same. And each camera I've got has got very slight differences. Sometimes it could be just simply the fact, if you're talking about very short depth of field, that where they've mounted the 3/8 ring to mount it to your tripod, that's actually a little bit further forward of the sensor or behind the sensor, and even that will change it on short stuff. So learn each camera, learn how far the distances are, set yourself a little test rig up in the garden, put it on a tripod, then measure 0.5 meter, 0.75 meter, 1 meter, then 2 meters, 3 meters, 4 meters, and put things on a balustrade or on a wall at those specific distances, and then change, bring yourself at a slight angle, and then change your f-stop settings as you go through the different focal lengths and come back, change it to another f-stop and go through each of the focal lengths and come back. And look at the results and compare what you get each time. I know now, for most of my lenses, or for some particular lenses, if I want to stop my depth of field at 4.5 feet and have it up to 4 feet, I'm probably going to be shooting at 3.5, because at 4 feet distance, if I want to then create a 0.5 foot barrier, if I go to 1.8, I'm definitely not going to get that. It's going to be front or back. I need to go a little bit further. So I'd put it at maybe 2.8, I could get away with it, but more likely 3.5 is going to give me a shallow enough depth of field to cover about 6 inches beyond a subject. That's what you need to be able to do. You don't want to know specifics. You don't want to sit down with a measure and tape it out. You want to be able to take dynamic photos. And if you're talking about taking pictures of people, you want to be able to change your depth of field to create different effects, knowing what you're roughly going to get out before you start. And you get that from doing the setup exercises. There is a thing you can go on to called dofmaster.com, which gives you a depth of field calculator, and they will tell you the absolute specifics of what you're getting with each camera body, with each lens that you put on it, and at each focal stop. So it's up to you. But I would suggest you'll learn more by doing it yourself than you'll learn from sitting with a depth of field calculator and sitting there with a pencil and a tape measure. You'll get nothing else from that. Any rules of thumb for taking pictures of people? Wherever you do shallow depth of field with portraits, always, always, always eyes in focus. If you've got to choose between one eye in focus and another out of focus, I'm a bit old school, I'm afraid, and I always suggest nearest eye to the camera should be the focused one. But lots of people don't do that, and they take perfectly good pictures. I'm just an old fart. What can I say? But people, definitely. I think thinking about, I mean, distance on eyes, if you're talking about a portrait, the person's going to be slightly turned towards you, perhaps. So you'll probably have about a 2 to 3 inch variance on the depth of field. 2.8 will be plenty at that to get both eyes in focus if you're no more than sort of 3 feet away. Any further than that, and you've got loads more to play with, you can go right down. But for a moment, I think you'll probably find that'll be enough. Animals, again, eyes. Anything that's animals, eyes has got to be in focus. Unless you're doing something that's abstract, like, you know, you're looking at a nose to try and highlight the nose for a story about ocular, olfactory systems or whatever. And objects, there's no rules with objects, really. What you're trying to do is create some kind of focal point where the eye will start to draw to where the focus is. If you talk about matching that with your rule of thirds, you might want to put your focus on roughly where the item's going to be for the rule of thirds. That may help. It's up to you. But, I mean, there's no rules, mate. Just go out and shoot pictures and repeat what looks good and don't if it doesn't. So I did it. Last question's from Steve C. in Leicester. He says, "Hi, Ewan. I've got a Canon 550D and a couple of lenses, but nothing special. I've got about £1,000 to spend on equipment." We like that idea. "At the moment, and wondered if you'd suggest I upgrade the body or buy some lenses. At the moment, I've got a 50mm lens, a 70-300 and a 28-300. I'm guessing that the 50 is the Canon lens, the 70-30 is the Sigma one, and the 28-30 could be a couple, but I'm going to say Tamron. There we go. They're a good spread of lenses. I wouldn't worry about that at all. If you got a grand to spend, would you upgrade the body? The 550D is a perfectly good camera. I mean, if you're going out and shooting some wildlife-y stuff with that spread of lenses, or you're shooting some portrait stuff, you're not trying to make any money out of it, you're not trying to sell it commercially or stick it on stock image sites, that's going to take a really good picture. I wouldn't worry about it. If I had a grand, perhaps I'd buy another couple of lenses and I'd buy something that would be an ancillary, you know, a really good tripod, a really good bag, or a really good flash gun. The Speedlight 55 EX would be 550 EX would be superb purchase to go with that, and it'll work just fine. I don't think you need to upgrade your body at all, depending on what you shoot, but I'm not one to talk, because I upgrade my body when I feel like it, so yeah. Canon lenses, here's what's on offer at the moment. I've gone and done some price checks for you, Steve. Canon 70-40 f4. Now that is a magic lens. That is a really, really good quality lens. Perfect for your portraiture stuff. You won't get an awful lot of barreling on the lens, and it's great for anything that's close up or abstract. 579 quid. So that's half your money gone on a cracking lens. You'll really get some use out of that. EF 100, 2.8 macro as well. Don't forget your macro. I think if you've got the 70-30, you're going to have macro with that, but it's not good. It's 1-2 macro on that. I think the 100 is 1-1 macro, and that's going to cost you 689 quid. That's a big chunk, but that's a fabulous, fabulous lens. You'll have loads of fun with that. If you're shooting some video, pancake lens, 40mm, 164 quid. 85mm USM, 1.8, 299. That's a really good price at the moment from Wex. And the best one of all is the EF 70-200mm f4. That's 483 quid, and that is a really fast, fast lens. There's no moving parts on the outside of that, so when you turn to get your twist and focus, it's all going on inside. It's really, really solid lens. So I've got the 70-200 f2.8, which is £1,000 more than that, but that 70-200 is a brilliant, brilliant lens at f4. Go and buy that. I wouldn't buy another body if I was out there just shooting some fun stuff, mate. Not at all. Go for some decent lenses. And then the thing is, well, you get another grand in a few months or a year's time, then think about maybe a better body or something like that. And eBay as well, because you'll get much better prices on eBay for that stuff too. There we go. Those are your questions. If you want to send us a question, send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. I'll read it out. I'll answer it for you. I'll do my very best. Thanks to those three people that sent them in this week. Every question that comes in gets an answer. I either read it out or I send an email back to the person. So get typing, and I'll help you out as much as I can. This podcast and all the others on this network, UK2, they're brilliant. We had an outage on our server day before yesterday, and like an arse, I raised a support ticket for it, and then I got distracted, and I never clicked send on the tab, and I closed the tab without clicking send. And then the following day, I was on to my contact saying, "Oh, we haven't been got." You know, we're still out. And he said, "Well, what's the ticket number?" And of course, I didn't have the ticket number because I never actually submitted the ticket. So they didn't send me an email that said, "Here's your ticket number. We're working on it." So I had to raise another ticket. 30 minutes later, we're back online. Everyone's going to look and go, "Well, your site was off for 24 hours. How good can they be?" No, the site was really only off for about 30 minutes because this arse forgot to click send on the ticket. So please, please, please think of UK2 in the highest order, because they really are slick. I mean, I put the ticket in and 30 minutes later we were up and running. So they've got good customer service. They've got great products on offer. There's a brand new service coming called Website Builder, which has got me salivating. I've done the voiceover for the British advert for it. And It's a simple drop and click system for creating a website that's just beautiful. You can add shopping carts and e-commerce stuff into it, and it's dead easy. I haven't had a play with it, but I've watched the little video demo of it, and it does seem straightforward. So watch out for that coming along, Website Builder. That'll be on UK2 soon. But they're really good. You can get loads of discounts with us. We've got offer codes on our page. Click on the sponsors page, use the click through to UK2, use the offer codes. Save yourself an absolute blooming fortune. Will the ad be seen on daytime TV channels? I don't know. I'd be famous if it did. The bash is coming. I forgot to do the bash ad. Here we go. The bash is coming on the 6th of July. If you want to come along, it'll be great fun. We'll have a really good time. It's Saturday the 6th of July at 10 a.m. in the morning, and we're going to start drinking and eating. There's going to be food provided all day and beer. You don't have to bring anything but yourself. It's up here in Birmingham. Tickets are £20. You have to buy them from our website, and you need to buy them before the end of May because they've got to confirm the venue, and the venue's really expensive. So please, please, please get your tickets in. Get them in the next week or 2 weeks, because after that, they'll be gone. There won't be any more. I will be hard on this. I will cut people off, and we won't have a big bash this year if it doesn't need it. If you're going to come, get your ticket now. The £20 pays for everything, though. You don't have anything else to get. There'll be loads of fun on the day. We've got competitions. We've got loads of kids there as well. People are bringing their families. Should be a really good laugh. So come along to the bash, Saturday 6th July. And there's a curry on the 5th, which is the banner below that on the homepage. So click on that if you want to get it. It's £10 for the curry, but that's £10 off your curry bill. It's not a curry free of charge for tenner. So there you go. Come to the bash. You won't regret it. My dad, who used to go professional photography, always said for a wedding, focus on the eyes of the bride. Focus on the eyes of the person who's paying the bill. That would be my advice. We'll be back again next week, same time, 2 p.m. on Fridays. Come and join the live chat room and throw some abuse. Until then, have a great week and take some pictures.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.